Do you know how much cash back you're leaving on the table for settling for the wrong credit card? Imagine earning up to 5% cash back on your groceries for the next 30 years. Just think of all that cash back you can get on those groceries. NerdWallet helps everyone make smarter financial decisions today, so the future you will thank you for it. With NerdWallet, you won't regret missing out on rewards. NerdWallet lets you compare smart cashback credit cards side by side to make the most of your everyday spending. So what could future you do with more cashback? A getaway with the kids? A spa day for yourself? Whatever it is, make it happen with a smarter cashback credit card. And don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Paying for college shouldn't be the hardest part of higher education. Hi, it's Rena Ninen, co-host of the Ask Lisa podcast. I recently spoke with U.S. Education Secretary Miguel Cardona about FAFSA, the free application for student aid. Did you know you can apply for financial aid today and you'll get a response within 1 to 3 days? Check out our show notes to the link for the full interview on our Ask Lisa podcast YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe for the latest videos from Lisa and me. That's the Ask Lisa podcast YouTube channel. This is Ask Lisa, a podcast to help people understand the psychology of parenting. Psychologist Dr. Lisa DeMore, author of 2 New York Times best-selling parenting books, takes your questions. And I'm co-host Rena Ninen, a journalist and mom of 2. Some of what we talk about comes from raising children ourselves. Most of the time, I'll be getting answers to your parenting questions. So send your questions to AskLisa at drlisademore.com. Episode 60, What Makes for a Good Divorce? You know, we're talking about divorce this week, and something you told somebody years ago still sticks in my mind when you said, just because you get divorced doesn't mean that the marriage was bad.
That's right. I think, you know, we get married and we're one age and we're one person and then we grow and change and we don't always grow in the same direction. And I was talking with a friend of mine who had recently divorced, and I don't always assume people are heartbroken about it, though sometimes they are. And it became clear that she was not heartbroken about it. And I said, you know, just because something's not good forever doesn't mean it wasn't good.
That's such a good quote. Oh.
It helps. It helps. And it's even true of things like friendships that don't last forever and ever. And I think sometimes we can have this idea that if it doesn't have a happy ending, the whole thing's bad. And that's not usually the case.
I never had that perspective before until you said that. And a lot of people are reevaluating their relationships with everybody, you know, from spouses to friends in this pandemic. So this letter we got, I want to read this to you. It says, "Hi, Dr. Lisa. My husband and I are getting divorced, and my 6-year-old daughter has been hammered this year with life in a pandemic and her parents' separation. She seems fine on the surface, but I'm very aware of how sad and stressed she is deep down. Last night, I asked if she's been sad since her dad moved out. She said yes, and that, quote, things feel complicated now. I feel her pain and wanted to know what a single parent like me should do to help. Also, I want to get help from a psychologist for both of us, but I find it's hard to find a good one, and she doesn't like to sit and open up in a virtual session at all. Can you talk a little bit about the general methods of searching for a good psychologist? Thank you." It sort of broke my heart because you know that there's so many other kids also going through this, first off.
There were a lot of divorces in the pandemic.
Yes.
That is one of the early statistics, is a lot more filings for divorces. And so it's happened. Man, it's a really good letter.
Yeah, it is a good letter. So the child was saying that it's complicated here, is sort of vague.
Yeah.
What worries do kids whose parents are getting divorced have that adults might not think about?
That's the key, right? Like, right out of the gate, right? That's the question, you know, that this kid is saying, you know, the mom can sense that she's in pain, and the kid's saying, yeah, it's complicated, but complicated is vague. And it's such a loaded thing for a child when parents divorce, even if there's been a lot of open disagreement and there's been a lot of friction. It's a big deal, always a big deal when parents decide to split up. I do like to think a bit developmentally about what the likely culprits are. So for younger than six, but maybe even still at six, kids can have a lot of causal questions. They cannot be entirely sure how cause and effect works. So if you've got a child 0 to 5, for sure, well, obviously 0 is not going to be that verbal, you want to be very clear that the child didn't do or say anything that brought the divorce about, which of course wouldn't occur to a parent, but it would occur to the child. And also that the child has no power to do or say anything to make the divorce go away. You know, kids can think, oh, if I had just not spilled the juice and then got you upset and then daddy was upset because you were upset, maybe then you wouldn't get a divorce. So with littler kids, we definitely want to say, you know, this is a decision that, you know, we're assuming here, you know, the letter's a heterosexual relationship. You know, this is a decision that your dad and I made, and it has nothing to do with anything you did or didn't do. You know, that kind of insert that. And it's worth saying probably that well into development. And then to say, and just because we're not wanting to be a couple anymore, that love has died down, doesn't change at all. Our love for you and our shared delight in watching you grow, you know, something like that, to really help the child make a separation between choices the parents are making and what the child may be, you know, thinking or worrying about themselves.
Is that for any age group? So I'm hearing you say, one, letting them know this wasn't anything they did that caused this.
Yeah.
And two, that love, support, and structure will still remain and be there. That doesn't change.
That doesn't change. And I think that those are things that we say at every age. You know, just, you know, we don't want to be a couple anymore, but that doesn't change the fact that we love parenting you together, or that we are going to continue to both be, you know, your mom and your dad, or your, mm-hmm. you know. And I think, you know, in this letter, so thinking now developmentally, so 0 to 5, you got to cover those bases for sure, but probably a little later into development. Six, one thing that six-year-olds are very preoccupied with is wrongdoing and fault and guilt. You know, it's very much the nature of being 6 years old. You're very curious about that. So when I hear a six-year-old saying, oh, it's complicated, mm-hmm. what I presume developmentally is they're thinking, whose fault is this? Like, so you've taken them off the hook by saying it's not your fault, but they're like, well, then whose fault is it really? You know, they're very curious about this. And so with a six-year-old, and again, older kids certainly may want this kind of information, it may be worth saying, and this gets very tricky about how the divorce actually came about, you know, this is a decision we came to together. You know, the relationship was no longer working for us. You know, this is a place we're saying just because it wasn't good between us forever doesn't mean it wasn't good. And we have you, and that's, you know, the best thing to come out of this marriage. And we both value that. But to try to address the no one's at fault, no one's to blame, we're all moving forward. But Rena, you know, what this really makes me think about is our most recent episode of like the front stage and the backstage.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of front staging and backstaging when you're a parent who's divorcing. There's what you're saying to your kids to support and get them through it.
Yeah.
Which may be pretty different from what the full reality is about, you know, how the parent themselves is feeling about the divorce, how the parents arrived at the divorce. And I think that there's often such a huge tension in divorcing families about how much do we explain that there was an affair? How much do we explain that we couldn't get along financially? I mean, how much do we lay bare all of those details versus how much do we, and I think the best term for it is like put on a good face and say, whatever our challenges are, those are not for you to worry about. Here's what you need to know. We love parenting you, and we're no longer, you know, spouses, but we are still co-parents. And that is something that, you know, is what you need to focus on. And that's what we're going to focus on.
But, you know, I imagine when you're divorcing someone, most likely you can't stand the other person. You don't even want to co-parent.
Right.
How can you make divorce easier when you can't stand that person and you want to tell your kid it's his fault because you
Absolutely.
Probably feel that way, or it's her fault because you probably feel that way?
Absolutely. So, you know, right, people don't get divorces because things are going well, right?
Right.
So we have this very real problem of an adult who is, I will also just say, they're a wreck. I mean, getting a divorce mm-hmm. is a horrible thing, even if it's the one that you wanted the divorce and you've been wanting the divorce, right? When the moment comes, the parent is a mess. I mean, and just so struggling themselves. And so then from that position to have to basically bring the best parenting to the table they've ever brought, while also trying to be neutral and generous about the other parent who they cannot tolerate or who they feel badly hurt by, right? I mean, if you want to watch people do some Herculean stuff, it is this moment in a life. So let's go big here, Rena. Mm-hmm. Let me just say what parents really, really, really want to avoid, and then we can get into the nuances of what they might do instead. So for decades, we've studied divorce, and this research really took off in the 70s when divorce took off, and really a devoted group of researchers started measuring everything that went down in a divorce, you know, whether there was financial difficulty, whether there were moves, whether kids were moved from their school, whether, you know, visitations, like all sorts of variables, and then looking at how kids fared over time. And you know, there were a lot of data points to work with. And one thing came blazing through as the thing that's going to really make it hard for your kids to thrive. And it wasn't moving, it wasn't finances, it wasn't all of these like really disruptive aspects of life that sometimes come with divorce. It was whether or not the parents were in conflict in front of the kids, whether the kids were exposed to ongoing conflict between the parents.
Oh, interesting.
Was the number one driver of outcomes that we don't want. So what I would say to parents is that's your focus, right? Whatever else has happened, your focus is not to expose your kids to ongoing conflict between you and your ex. Mm. And so that takes
a form
of...
But that's so hard.
It's so hard.
Lisa, that's so hard because you try not to argue in front of your kids. First off, this pandemic has had us all on top of each other
yep.
and driving each other mad. We all know that. And to not fight, like, how do you set that up? Because you probably want to strangle that person. You're so fed up.
So you might fight if there's any way to do it away from the kids, where they can't hear it, they can't see it. If you're going to fight, that's the goal, right, is to try to insulate them from that. Not easy, not easy. Of course, I would want people in counseling. Of course, I would want people to go maybe have their fights in an office where they could get some help. Even if they're splitting up, the goal then is to resolve the relationship so that they can co-parent together. But I would just say take it elsewhere. If you must fight and if it's ugly, like take it elsewhere. I'd rather there not be ugly fights, but I get it. The other challenge then is to not talk bad about the other parent to your kids.
Oh, that's so hard. Come on. That's so hard.
I know. And especially when it's like right there in front of everybody and you are really, really undone by the divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I know. And to... You know, have a kid who's maybe even asking questions like, well, why, right? I mean, it would be very hard not to be like, well, I'll tell you why, right? And here's what I would say about why, if you need a reason to restrain yourself, here's the reason to restrain yourself. Kids are made up of their parents. They identify with and admire and want to have good feelings about their parents. And so when you trash your ex, your kid feels an injury in there because they feel connected to that person and that that person is part of them and they have that person in them. So when you're trashing your ex, your kid feels it too, like that they're being trashed a little bit too.
What? I have never thought of it that way.
Yeah. No, I think we want to think about it that way. So
wow.
If... You know, if this mom is like, oh, your dad, blah, 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 the little girl, the part of her that loves her dad, the part of her that feels like her dad, the part of her who has aspects of him that she wants to be like, those are getting hurt by what the mom is saying about the dad.
Wow, that's so good to remember, because even if you're not getting a divorce, it's been tough these past 2 years. And having everyone living together so closely, 24 hours a day practically, you forget how that can affect development, even if you're still together.
It can. I'll tell you, one thing that happened in the time I was in training. So I went to graduate school. I started in the fall of 1993. Mm-hmm. And email had just begun. It was just the earliest iterations of email. And I was doing a huge amount of work around divorce and helping divorcing families. As email really gained traction, email's the best thing that ever happened to divorce.
Really? Why?
Yeah. Well, because it used to be, before email, which I know feels like basically historic times, right, before email, that if parents needed to communicate or exes needed to communicate, they had to get on the phone or they had to see each other. And then it could get very ugly very fast. And with email, what needed to be communicated, because of course, if you're co-parenting, there are a ton of logistics and things that have to be managed. So you do have to communicate. What needed to be communicated could be written down and then could be looked at to make sure it wasn't nasty. And then the person who receives it could have some time to respond to it, without feeling, off, kind of reacting just immediately to what's being said. And the other thing, bluntly, Rena, there was also a written record of what happened.
Wow.
And so, a lot of families are in court. Sometimes they're in a pretty ugly court battle. Mm-hmm. And so all of those emails would then become sometimes swept into divorce court. And if they were nasty, they were nasty. And so email was like this wonderful arrival in the world of divorce, because suddenly parents didn't have to talk to each other. They didn't have to be face to face. And there was a written record of what went down. So I would say the more parents can shift their communications, if they cannot get along with each other and cannot separate being married from being co-parents, written communications are a real gift.
Mm. So interesting. I was talking to a very high-powered divorce attorney before we were taping this, and she was saying Instagram. People don't realize that Instagram has been used, and text messaging has been used quite a bit in divorce cases, because it lays out exactly where you've been, what you've done, what you're thinking. And people forget. People forget that you leave traces, and those traces your children can often see and can be admitted into a record. So,
And so you can use this for, problem, or you can use it for good. And luckily email's pretty private. So, kids tend not to look at their folks' emails. So, but they do look at their folks' texts. I want people to remember that, kids, a lot of our texts show up on our kids' iPads or family iPads, that they're not nearly as contained as email are. And so I think, we want to be careful about where we communicate and how. And, this actually came up in our recent episode about when do I give a kid a phone? Like, what communication do you do under what channels? And email can make a big difference for things like this.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back on the Ask Lisa podcast. With Mother's Day coming up, I want to take a quick moment to appreciate not only the moms, but anyone who's taken on the role of caregiver. You do everything for everyone else. Now it's time to do something for you, starting with your skin. OneSkin has a simple, scientifically validated routine that keeps your skin looking and feeling younger. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It's really the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that causes lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin. I've been using their product for the past few months, and I'm hooked. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using the code ASKLISA at oneskin.co. That's 15% off of oneskin.co with the code ASKLISA. After you purchase, be sure to tell them that you heard about them from us. We hope you'll support the show and tell them we sent you. Stitch Fix sends style so good, you can feel it. They deliver all the confidence that comes from a truly amazing outfit without any of the work. You don't have to get into your car. You don't have to go through hangers and figure out what section to find what you're looking for. It's so simple. What my stylist does is they take my wardrobe to the next level. She shows me what works for me. She helps me discover new things that I like that I wouldn't have picked up if I was browsing online or even walking through a store. As the seasons change, you want different things. And when there are big events in your life that you want to dress up for, Stitch Fix has you covered. And I also love that I've got everyday staples from Stitch Fix that feel good on that I am constantly reaching for in my wardrobe. Style that makes you feel as good as you look. You can get started today at stitchfix.com/askalisa. That's stitchfix.com/askalisa. stitchfix.com/askalisa.
Hey, Ask Lisa listeners. This episode is proudly brought to you by LolaVie, an award-winning hair care line founded by the fabulous Jennifer Aniston. LolaVie is Jen's vegan and cruelty-free hair care line that is suitable for hair of all types and textures. And in fact, my whole family has converted over to using it. Me, my 13-year-old daughter, we're sending it to my kid at college, and my husband, who has graying hair that is not as soft as it used to be. What we love about LolaVie is that it leaves our hair so soft, and it also smells so good. Unlock Jennifer Aniston-approved hair now at LolaVie.com. As our loyal listeners, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use the code ASKLISA at checkout. That's 15% off your order at LOLAVIE.com with promo code ASKLISA. Please note that you can only use one promo code per order and discounts cannot be combined. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you. Your hair will thank you.
Welcome back to the Ask Lisa podcast. So Lisa, when you've helped counsel families, and I'm sure you've seen some really acrimonious divorces, what really helps people get through that angry point and focus on the children?
It can help to have support and it can help to have counseling. And there's an important question in this that we'll come back to about finding a good clinician. It can really help to separate out how I feel about that person as a spouse versus how I feel about that person as my kid's other parent, and really try to support them as a co-parent, even if you can't stand them as a spouse. I will tell you, there's more parents can do, in addition to not bad-mouthing, which we really want to avoid. There's two other things that parents can do that are very powerful in terms of getting things on the right track after a divorce. So the first thing, and this can feel like a stretch, but if a parent can do this, I think it's an extraordinary thing. So they may not be unable to stand their ex-wife, like just cannot stand her, and have left for any variety of reasons, or the marriage is over for any variety of reasons. But if that same parent can look at their child and say, oh, that thing you do, you know, where you're able to be so funny and charming with people, you get that from your mom. If they can admire within their child, outwardly and openly, the best aspect of the parent that they just broke up with, that is one of the most generous and decent things I've ever watched parents do. And it's good. It's good because what it says to the kid is, yeah, no, we are not together, but that doesn't change my ability to appreciate your mom and what she's done for you and appreciate the parts of you that are like the best of her. It's wow. Like the opposite of trashing the parent, basically.
Wow. Wow. I don't know. That really just resonates. I never looked at it as when you're trashing the other parent, you're also hurting the child because they see themselves.
Yep. And so then you can flip it and you can actually admire your ex in your child and show them that. Because what it also basically says, and this is a hugely important thing to communicate to kids in divorce situations, is I want you to feel good about both of us. Just because I don't feel good about your mom doesn't mean you shouldn't feel good about your mom. And I can feel good about your mom as your mom, even though I don't feel good about your mom as my ex. To start to keep inserting those different layers of what these relationships are really about. Because we don't want kids thinking, oh, you know, this parent's so angry at mom, this parent's going to be upset with me if I have good feelings about mom. Like, we really want to clarify that. And so that's so like kind of deceptively simple gesture of saying, oh, that thing you do that, like you got that from your mom, it's wonderful. It covers so much ground in saying, you know, I want you to feel good about her. I want you to feel good about both of us. I can feel good about her in terms of the best that comes from her into you. It does so much in a very small space. Mm.
So if I have this urge, I'm getting divorced, and I have this urge of really sticking it to my spouse who may have cheated on me, may have left me in financial ruins, definitely I feel destroyed the life we had. What would you say to them to get them to stop poking the bear or sticking it to them that could affect their children? Like, what's the one thing you think that can make people sort of realize why it's important to work together?
I really think it is this piece around we have the data. We have the data. I mean, we have been able to study this over decades. And if you really want to get kids through a divorce as unscathed as absolutely possible, the number one thing you do is you keep your conflict separate. You really, really focus on being good co-parents. But then, Rena, this gets to a second thing. I mentioned there were a couple of things parents can do. There's a second thing that's very, very tricky, which is, okay, so say the scenario you described, like maybe that person lied and cheated and you were like, I'm done, it's over. So then one day your 14 or 15-year-old comes home and says, I don't think dad was telling me the truth about something, right? So maybe that parent, you know, people are often, you know, they are who they are. So let's go back to this heterosexual scenario. So the mom is, you know, out of it, left the marriage because the dad lied and cheated. And then let's say the teenage son comes home and is like, dad said something. I don't think it's true, right? And the parent's thinking, I bet it's not true, right? Like, mm-hmm. He lied a lot. Okay, this I find to be a very complex moment in divorced parenting because, of course, we've got the number one rule, which is you don't trash the other parent. And so a parent who's trying to observe that rule is like, you know, like they don't know what to say. But we also have the rule that we don't want to lie to our kids, or we don't want our kids to feel crazy. And so in those moments, if the parent can do it well, a good thing to remember is that even in good marriages, we explain our spouses to our kids, right? Like, even in good marriages, we say, mm-hmm. Now you know if you want mom to overreact, the way to do it is to leave your stuff in the middle of the dining room. And so we're not trashing the parent, we're just helping the kid navigate around the parent. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. In a good divorce, it is not out of bounds if a kid comes home and says, I don't think dad's telling me the truth, for a parent, if they're in the right space, to say, you know, you may be right about this. That is one of the things I found challenging about your dad, is that I could not count on him to be honest. Mm-hmm. And if you need some support around it, I'm here to help you think about how to navigate it. But we're both here for you. And I want you to know there is a lot good in your dad, and I'm here to help you get the absolute best out of him. So that's the like asterisk on mm-hmm. the no trashing rule.
I love that. You know, I want to go back to this letter because this parent raises such a good question about virtual sessions for kids and finding a good psychologist. How do you find a good psychologist? And for people who are lucky enough to have insurance to pay for it too, it's sort of hard. But I think we're all so sick of Zooms, right? How do you get someone to really jive with your kid?
So I love the question about finding a good clinician. And what I would say is ask around, ask your kid's school. You know, often the counselors at a school will have a good sense of the local talent. Ask your kid's pediatrician. There are people who specialize in divorce. I think it's really nice to work with somebody who's seen it all. You know, because divorces, they do fall in patterns. You don't have to try to figure this out for yourself. The question about a six-year-old and therapy, and certainly virtual therapy, what I would say is, with a younger child, often the parent can provide a lot of therapeutic support with good coaching. So it's not necessarily the case that a six-year-old needs to always be in therapy unless they're asking for it or are clearly having a difficulty where you've worked with someone and it becomes clear that, you know, the child being in therapy makes sense. I would say to this parent, maybe find a good person, even if it's virtual, who can both help you and then also help you have conversations with your child that might bring forward the feelings that need to be discussed. It can work really well with younger kids for the parent to be the one talking a bit more about feelings, asking a bit more about how they're feeling. With younger kids, they're accustomed to talking with their parents about their feelings. They're not as accustomed to talking with strangers. And that sometimes what happens is there's good coaching of the parent. I will do this. Good coaching of the parent over time. And then we kind of hit a limit. It's clear the kid still needs help, but what the parent can do is now fully done. At which point, then I will work with parents about bringing kids into therapy and getting therapy started and helping therapy make sense. But I guess the sum here is, especially for younger kids, it's not necessarily always the best first move to drop them in therapy and try to help them figure out how to use that space. The parent can often do quite a bit with help from a clinician.
Mm, that's really great. What if your child doesn't want to go see anyone and has shut down over this?
Yeah, I would say that's where a good clinician can help you, start to figure out how to get in there and how to be useful and how to think about what may be causing things. I would almost feel like there's a lot of coaching that can be useful in divorce. Mm-hmm. We clinicians have seen so much that there's a lot of wisdom available and a lot of mistakes you don't have to make because we've seen it all. And so I would say get someone who feels like they can really help coach you through how to make this work for you and your kids best.
Such a great point. What do you have for us for Parenting to Go?
There's some great literature around divorce, and I'm going to recommend two books that I really like. One is very old. It's called Growing Up with Divorce. It's by Neil Coulter, and he's actually one of the people who trained me, and it's a very, very thoughtful and very sophisticated book that looks at divorce in terms of immediate crisis, short-term aftermath, and long-term, and also breaks it down developmentally. So it's just a fantastic book with a ton of wisdom in it. And then the other book I love by Corcoran and Ross has a very provocative title. It's Joint Custody with a Jerk.
That's great.
It's a great title. And I think the book is very clever in that once you open it, it also leaves open the possibility that you might be part of the problem. So it's a wonderful, wonderful book. But it's brilliant, strategic, thoughtful. And if you're going to get two books on your shelf about divorce, though there are many excellent books, those are the two I would recommend.
Oh, I love that. That's great. And we'll put this up in our show notes for anyone who missed it. And thank you. I learned so much that I didn't realize. Also about parents who might be going through divorce. And yeah, if you have a friend of your child's friend or something, this is so helpful. This is so helpful for all of us to hear. I'll see you next week.
I'll see you next week.
And I hope you all take a moment to enjoy the holiday season. We're going to be off next week, and we'll be back the following week with an encore episode. My kid looked at porn. What should I do? Happy holidays. Thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Ask Lisa podcast so you get the episodes just as soon as they drop. And send us your questions to AskLisa at drlisademore.com. And now a word from our lawyers. The advice provided on this podcast does not constitute or serve as a substitute for professional psychological treatment, therapy, or other types of professional advice or intervention. If you have concerns about your child's well-being, consult a physician or mental health professional. If you're looking for additional resources, check out Lisa's website at drlisademore.com. We'll see you next week.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.